Welcome to the Fat Fueled Family Podcast, where every week we talk about things like nutrition, training,
how to live a healthy and active lifestyle with your little ones, peaceful parenting, education,
and of course, mindset.
Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Keto Counterculture, at Fat Fueled Mom, and at Fat Fueled Kids, and search for Fat Fueled Family on YouTube.
To stay up to date with everything we're doing, sign up with your email at www.fatfuel.family and check out our blog for workouts, meal ideas, and all the other cool stuff we love to talk about.
Don't forget to hit subscribe.
All right, welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast. I'm Danny Vega, and I'm joined by my beautiful and hungry wife, very busy, hungry mom of two,
holiday
mom
insane.
Of three. Because she's mom of three boys, two boys plus me.
Yes.
Maura Vega.
Absolutely.
How are you?
I'm busy.
We haven't spoken today.
I haven't even literally spoken to you today because we're so busy.
Yeah. I went
holiday
to train.
Madness is in full effect.
Yeah. She's, and
one day I'll
learn.
I am a procrastinator.
Yeah.
But I feel like I can these days because of Amazon Prime. It's a little easier to procrastinate. But nonetheless.
But I think what there's a deeper meaning to it. And it's kind of like I have the same problem as you. You have a hard time and you procrastinate on things that you don't agree with. And so we don't really
like
agree
all
with
gift
all
giving.
These gifts. Like we don't agree with it.
Let's see if maybe next year we can give our family some time and we can like do where a woman in the sauna actually gave me a really good idea because her kids are a little older. She's been doing it a little longer. And she said that they don't do that anymore, like getting every single person gifts. And like, what if you have a huge family? Like, so they draw names and so do the kids.
Oh,
so the
that's
kids
great.
Draw names for the, you know, they get a cousin or whoever it is and then the adults. And then you get a better gift instead of just trying to get everyone like something.
It's it, it loses its value
it does, it
if
totally
everybody's
does.
Forced to give, you know,
it
loses the whole meaning. But anyways. We are super excited because we have someone who I learned about earlier this year and instantly loves his content. You know, we also share a lot of interests. Mike Butzel has been interested in health and nutrition since he was 7 years old. Sounds like me. He grew up in the 80s and he had an interest in building muscle. And it was all fostered by these awesome old school Van Damme and Schwarzenegger movies. And he knew he wanted to lift weights when from an early age, just like me. And, you know, fast forward a few years now, he got his BS in biology from Western Washington University in 2006. He completed his MS in clinical nutrition from the University of Bridgeport in 2015. He's also a graduate of the Institute of Functional Medicine, Applying Functional Medicine in Clinical Practice, AFMCP. He's a functional medicine consultant in the natural product industry and has worked as a nutritionist with Gerard Guillory, MD of the Care Group. In Denver, Colorado, he's lectured alongside Dr. Guillory in a large setting in the Denver area, and they've also been featured on local TV programs discussing the power of nutrition and functional medicine. He also published his first book in 2014, The Belly Fat Effect, The Real Secret About How Your Diet, Intestinal Health, and Gut Bacteria Help You Burn Fat. His main interests are low-carb, ketogenic diets, gut bacteria health, sleep, and building muscle. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Welcome, Mike Butzel. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, man.
Thanks so much for being on.
First of all, we're really happy to have you here. And second of all, our conversation in my house, beyond all the cool things we spoke about, the two main takeaways for me were, number one, I need to have more people in my house because it's really cool to have
interviews
in the house.
I can't wait to see like all the stuff you guys are
doing.
That's fun.
And
awesome.
Number two is Mike Butzel is an awesome human being.
Thanks, man.
It's our pleasure, man. So I want to get started right away because, there's a lot that I want to talk about. And of course, some interesting questions that both of us are interested in. And so I want to get your take on some of them. And I'd also to inform maybe any self-experimentation I do in the coming years. Before we start with that, I want to ask you, what's the most critical problem you're currently trying to solve?
Yeah, thanks for giving me a little heads up on this. I've been thinking about it. I have like little micro problems and macro problems. But, within my business, just trying to figure out how to create systems that are scalable. Because I find myself, making all these videos, then sometimes I'm editing them, making the introduction, doing all these different things. And I realize that it's not scalable. So trying to create systems so that I can build a team and be a good, you know, business owner and like treat people well and give them opportunities for both personal and financial growth. And then also, spread the word through the different works that we do. So yeah, I think that, you know, on a personal level, I mean, that's just what I'm figuring out. You know, we all go through different cycles in this entrepreneurial journey and so forth. And so I'm trying to learn how to be a better leader, hire people right, and make sure that they have clear expectations and goals and feel like they're being valued. So just that, I guess, you know, from just like from a selfish perspective, I guess, but also, I mean, I realize that like if you can create a cool business, not only do you help your customers, but if you build a great team, you can provide an awesome work environment. And, you know, because there's a lot of jobs out there where people, they show up, they do the work, they clock out, and they really are unengaged. They don't feel like they impacted other people. So to be able to create opportunities for people that, you know, they realize that, you know, you're improving the health and knowledge, so people can make more educated decisions. So yeah, that's my biggest problem that I personally face right now.
Well, man, the scalability thing is so huge because it's true. Like I find myself, you know, doing things that, you know, as they grow, I'm just like, this is just not scalable, you know? And then, you know, some of the things you may do better with like an assistant, but if you're not there with the business, then it just seems like maybe that's something that I probably got a table for now, or at least, mm-hmm. you know, cut off a little bit, you know?
Yeah, no, it's super interesting, right? And then you got to prioritize family and being around, you know, your kids and so forth. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conundrum for, small business owners trying to figure out how to delegate everything and structure it right and make sure that you're being present for the people that really matter.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's a huge thing. So I want to dive right into the good stuff. When you were at our house, you briefly asked me about building muscle and building strength. And I know that you've spoken about this on your channel, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about low carb and strength and hypertrophy, because I see this this dogmatic thinking in a lot of people where they think that there's only one way to do things. Or for instance, if you're ketogenic, then you have to always be ketogenic. And having you on, I really wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about how you have done it. Can it be done? Can it be optimized? And, you know, how you went about it when you were doing the powerlifting and trying to put on muscle.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, for a lot of people, just to kind of preface this whole conversation with, you need to be open to customizing things, meaning your diet, your training, carb intake, maybe protein, based upon your goals and your body type. And then I think also considering how long people have been physically active, and then what sort of underlying conditions, diseases, ailments are they facing, right? So, you know, if you're 350 pounds at 40% body fat, like, you know, talking about carb cycling may not, you know, be contextually applicable to what your goals are, right? But right. But if you're at 10% body fat, you're doing powerlifting, you're doing power bodybuilding style workouts, then you can start manipulating, you know, the carbohydrates to a different degree. But what I found personally is I love keto. I love intermittent fasting. I talk a lot about that on my channel. You know, I really live and breathe that. I like the science of it. However, what I find is that if I'm very strict keto and I do bodybuilding / powerlifting style workouts and try to go to failure on squats, deadlifts, you know, the big lifts, presses, pull-ups and so forth, that I don't have a lot of energy in the tank. And this is just me personally. It's not that I'm against keto at all. You know, I really think that it is a phenomenal physiologic state for longevity, for curbing inflammation, for, you know, affecting our mitochondria within our cells. But yeah, I find that if, when I carb cycle, so if I am going, you know, doing say squats, deadlifts or pressing, you know, I'll have maybe some sweet potatoes with me or in the post-workout window. And I find for me that my numbers go up, I feel better. You know, I visibly look a little bit bigger and I can, you know, put on more muscle and recover better. So what I find is that even when I carb cycle, because I've been lifting weights, as you mentioned, Danny, during the intro, consistently since I was 14, I would take maybe a week off a year, deload here and there, but for the most part, I've been very consistent, played high school football and everything like that. So, you know, I feel like you know, have that metabolic flexibility that if I do have carbohydrates around exercise, that it doesn't cause me to all of a sudden put on all this weight and my blood sugars are wrecked or anything. I can get right back into ketosis quickly. So, but the mistake that I made is when I first, you know, in 2015, when I started to dive into some of the peer-reviewed research about nutritional ketosis and how ketosis affects, as we mentioned, these cellular powerhouses called mitochondria, how the main ketone body, beta-hydroxybutyrate, how it really influences the way that our DNA is expressed through epigenetics and so forth. I got so excited about it. And because, you know, we know that ketones affect our appetite in a good way, they can suppress cravings and everything like that, I found that I was kind of under-eating when I'm very strict keto for an extended period of time because I just... not as hungry, right? And so it was
that's
like
Mauda is the same thing.
Yeah, that's my problem. Yeah, and it can become a problem when you're trying to add muscle. That's my problem too. I'm like never hungry and
exactly right.
Then I'm so under eating, right?
Totally. And that may work like if you have 100 pounds to lose, but if you're already lean and you're active, that can be a problem because, you know, to recover from a hard workout, you need calories, as you guys well know, and probably talk about extensively on this podcast. So so that's the thing, getting back to this dogma where people are like, no, I have to be keto because keto is the hot thing right now, or I have to be carnivore. So then I can't have these sweet potatoes because they're not carnivore. They're not keto, whatever. And so I think having a little bit of flexibility is key, particularly if you're physically active.
And I really appreciate that, man. And one of the things that I'm kind of interested in is I think Maura and I are just, because of our background, like we started paleo in 2011, 2011, yeah, right? Yeah. And so like we learned so much from it. You know, the biggest thing with paleo that we got, the biggest takeaway was using real food and getting away from counting calories and just eating the food we're supposed to eat, you know? And of course we move forward to keto and, you know, then we maximize that even more by lowering the excess carbohydrate. And then we put ourselves into these, you know, really good environments for burning fat and even for endurance exercise. And, you know, I'm looking at all types of research all the time. I understand, you know, for some of this really high intensity stuff, you know, and especially if it's repeated bouts, like at above, you know, 75% your VO2 max, you know, you can't rely on fat oxidation alone because the rate of ATP generation is just way slower than carbohydrate, right? And, you know, and then you're not going to rely on protein either because it's not, you know, that's even worse. So, you know, having those carbs. Now, did you, when you did this, was this was basically on, let's say, your overhead pressing, benching, or squatting and deadlifting days? This was a post-workout window type of deal. Like you would eat it, because that's how I see myself doing is eating. If I were to eat carbs, I would do it post-workout. Were you counting, or were you just saying, you know, I'm going to eat like this percentage more? And then what did you do with your fat? Because I do see some people going crazy and they're having like 400 something grams of carbs and then they're bringing their fat real, real low. It doesn't seem like to me that's something that you would do, but what was there any type of structure to this? And I know you've talked about this on your channel, but I want to, you know, let our listeners know.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, that's great. You know, so yeah, to answer your question, was it always post-workout? Sometimes it was intra-workout, like,
oh yeah.
And okay. It really depended, you know, on the intensity and the volume and, you know, how, like, in powerlifting and stuff, we talk about relative perceived exertion. So on a 0 to 10 scale, how painful or how hard was that? So when we're pushing things on a 9 to 10, like an all out max, you know, I don't want to be a hero and say, oh, I maxed out keto. I maxed out on my deadlift while I was keto. Like I want to just be able to push as much weight as I can for my body type without being hurt. And if I need to utilize carbohydrates for that, I'll do that. So, you know, sometimes honestly, I'll bring a banana to my, or I'll bring like dried mangoes, organic and things like that. Like I'm really, you know, it totally depends on, again, how depleted I feel, how heavy I'm going to go. But there really wasn't structure around it. It wasn't like I weighed, because I used to do all that, you know, back in 2002 when I got into this. You know, I had a scale, I had a journal, I wrote out everything. And now I just kind of look at, honestly, like how my clothes feel. You know, if my pants are feeling tight, I back down, you know, on the calories. Yeah, if they're loose, I just eat a little bit more, or throw in another meal into the mix. And I'm not saying that everyone should be that kind of intuitive, or, you know, some people need structure, you know, and to track their macros and so forth. But, you know, I just found that like some days I would have north of 300 grams of carbs. And like you said, I would cut fat back a little bit, at least during that meal, because I think part of the problem with Western food is it's very high in both carbs and fat together. Yeah. And I think that's where it sets up this weird metabolic environment where you have insulin being released and then you have the fat coming in. And again, not that carbs in isolation in the right context are bad, or nor is fat in isolation in the right context bad. But when you put them together, I think it's like you really do create some of that metabolic endotoxemia, and you're absorbing pro-inflammatory bacterial fragments from your gut, causing more fat storage. So on the post-work, and plus in a post-workout window, the purpose of carbohydrates, as you guys know, is to get them into the muscle tissue for replenishing glycogen and things like that. So if you eat fat with that meal, of course, that's going to slow that down. So generally, I try to just make it very simple for people. If you're inactive and you're doing keto, you can get away with one meal a day. That's totally fine. But if you're physically active, two meals a day, maybe three, depending upon the training intensity and your goals. And so in that immediate meal in the post-workout window, generally, sometimes I would delay the protein. It just depends on my schedule, right? If I'm working from home and it's convenient, I would have some sweet potatoes, sometimes a little honey if it was really intense. And then I would wait till I'm a little bit hungry, like an hour later, then have like some grass-fed steak, or I love eggs. We have backyard chickens. So I'd have like eight egg yolks or something like that. So, and then I would maybe have a like grass-fed whey protein shake a few hours even after that meal, then, you know, dinner with the family, which would be lower in carb and more keto. So that's how I would structure it. But again, it was totally experimenting, and I was doing a lot of testing with both the Precision Extra and the Keto Mojo. Then I had that Level app that looks at breath acetone.
Oh, and Level's awesome. So good.
Yes. So that was really, it was cool to experiment. I was so surprised that, you know, I could have this bolus of carbohydrates in the post-workout window, and my beta-hydroxybutyrate like 4 hours later was still kind of north of 0.5 millimolar. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. It's like against everything we've heard that you have to be under 20 grams of carbs a day to be keto, right?
And Maura, when I was asking you this, she's looking at me as you're answering, and she's giving me a face because she knows that I'm like trying to systematize it. You know, like I'm trying to like, okay, well, how would I do it? And then, yeah, you know, he's, how many grams?
He will have a scale to the day he dies. He'll be like at the hospital and be like, all right, did you weigh my food?
It's like a game. But I honestly, I
definitely think in that sense, it is kind of person to person, depending on your personality a little bit, because I'm like you. But I find it easy to be intuitive. Danny has tried to be intuitive, and I think he just...
I've blown past satiety so many times over the years because of my pursuit of getting bigger, like in high school on.
You've blown past satiety for years, so you just...
I have to govern myself. Yeah, I don't undereat if I'm not tracking. I overeat.
He overeats, Me, I undereat, right.
Great. Yeah. So go ahead.
Well, it speaks to kind of like how we introduce this, right? Is like know thyself, understand your strong points and weak points in your personality and everything like that. So I mean, it's great. Like everyone is so different. So understanding that is super helpful, you know. And I find this actually, it's funny, you know, hearing both of you talk about this, because I find a lot of women are very meticulous and they want to know exactly, like, you know, my wife and I would do a lot of recipes and things like that. And they want to know exactly to the teaspoon how much coconut oil you put in this recipe and everything, you know. So everyone is like so different, and there's nothing wrong with, as long as the intuitive thing is kind of working for you. But, you know, again, if it's tracking or intuition is not working, then switch it up and don't be afraid to switch it up. But what I find some of the people struggle with the tracking is that maybe they're inactive on a particular day, or their life load is stressful, or they didn't get the amount of sleep. And so like, oh, I have to have this many calories per day. Even though I'm not hungry, I have to like hit my goals, I have to hit my fat macros. And then that to me is like, well, if your body is telling you, you know, you're full, digestion is slow, you don't need to like shove more food in there. You can, you know, have a day where there's no, you know, because if you, again, talking about like paleo ancestral health concepts, this idea that food availability was just at our disposal. No unindustrialized human lives that way. So I think humans were hungry for a large percentage of the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about it all the time. Like how much, go to a cactus right now and see how much agave you can extract from that thing. I mean, it's not going to be or whatever trees these things are coming from. Yeah.
Everything is, even fruit, even something like fruit. It's like, it's not available the same to fruit us either, all obviously. The time.
It's a different, completely different fruit.
Where it would be once a year.
I asked Mike when he was here, I was like, do you have any silkies? And I don't think he does because I know you love the silky chickens.
I love those. They're like little puppies.
We don't. Yeah, we have, gosh, what kind? I forget that I used to know them all, but we have some Rhode Island Reds. They're really good for laying. They're very consistent. Oh, nice. And then we have the Black Copper Morans and they're really good. So their egg yolk is like really deep, dark orange. They're, I guess, one of the most sought after eggs in the world. Know. Yeah.
Good
so anyway,
if I ever get chickens.
we have a course on that at our website, but just definitely DM me anytime you guys have questions. I think it's for your young kids and anyone listening with kids, chickens are amazing because it really teaches them like the cycle of life. Like right now, I don't really eat a lot of eggs because our chickens are not laying eggs, you know? So for the store-bought eggs that you're getting, like it's a really artificial environment. Like they're pumping a bunch of light, pumping a bunch of heat in there to trick the chickens that it's like, oh, it's, you know, the sun's out, you should be laying eggs. But like, if you're north of say Atlanta, Georgia, you know, the days are pretty short and there's not enough heat, you know, and so they stop laying and it's a natural process. They're restoring their micronutrition that enable them to lay in the first place. And then come like February, March, they start kicking back up. So anyway, it's just so interesting. And again, you know, cause you did hit on it, Danny, the whole carnivore thing. And I think it's amazing that people are getting great results. I've been eating a lot of meat since 2002. A bodybuilding friend got me off, thank God, you know, tilapia and boneless skinless chicken breasts and more like ribeyes and T-bone steaks and stuff like that. But, you know, meat is seasonally available too, right? That was one of the things I made this video and I was just like, look, guys, from an ancestral health standpoint, is it practical that all humans were eating 3 to 4 pounds of meat every single day? I'm like, that's probably not really how things happened, right? Because first of all, there's a lot of predators out in nature, right? Especially 3, 4, 5, 1,000 years ago. You know, there's wolves and coyotes and things like that. Like humans are not the only animal that likes and enjoys and thrives off meat. Right. And so you're in competition with predators, preserving the meat and stuff like that. So I was just making the argument and I still do. And I know it's unpopular because people take what I say out of context, but I was just like, look, it's good to have a little variety and diversity in there. And some days we do meatless, like on Monday, it's kind of like a meatless Monday. It just makes, I generally fast too on Mondays. It's not that I'm anti-meat, but just like, hey, look, you know, food oscillates with the changes in the season. And anyway, so some people got irritated about that, but it's not that I'm anti-carnivore. It's not that I'm anti-meat, but if you talk to a cattle rancher, like say in August, you're like, all right, I want to buy half a grass-fed cow. They're going to say, well, you got to wait until, you know, the end of October when we actually go to slaughter because, you know, they're trying to fatten them up, right? So I thought that was really interesting. So I think naturally, our diet would oscillate a little bit. If we do, obviously, if you're a competitive bodybuilder, if you're trying to do a certain sport, or if you have a disease, I get it. You want to eat a therapeutic diet, but assuming that you're kind of where you want to be metabolically and physiologically from a strength standpoint, a little diversity, I think is okay. And so anyway, some people will get it irritated at me thinking I'm anti-carnivore, but.
Well, I will tell you that I totally agree with that. Number one, you know, having hunted for the first time recently, I started to think about this, man, because we show up at the market and we don't even think about it. When we pick up like, you know, 6 pounds of plastic wrapped meat, you know, we don't know where it's like coming from. We don't know what went into it. And we're used to that lack of variety. And the other thing that we don't think about either is that, you know, when you weren't hunting, you were gathering, you know, it's like you had to, I mean, you had no choice but to try and go gather as much other stuff as possible, because, you know, God forbid you have a few bad weeks of hunting or a few bad months, you need to store up so you don't starve. So, I mean, it's a very weird dogmatic thinking, but hopefully we try to get people to think about these things a little bit more, especially when they realize that we have no agenda. There's no agenda here. We're just trying to say, hey, you know, consider this.
Yeah. It's just, and I had told you that too. Remember? Cause I don't even remember, but I was like, well, in nature, it's not like you're going to have 3 pounds of ribeyes available every day, all day. Yeah. That's like not going to happen ever. But yeah, that's such a good point. But I'm glad you mentioned metabolic flexibility, because that's one of our questions and something we hear a lot about lately. But I don't think people quite understand what that means. So can you explain maybe what exactly that is, if it's something we should aim for, and how are some ways one can achieve metabolic flexibility?
Yeah, this is a wonderful question. And, you know, I think it comes back to, there was a couple of studies that came out in the 80s that found that individuals that were insulin resistant, they didn't oxidize as much lipids in that state. And they're, I mean, at any given point during the day, all of us are metabolizing some glucose and some fats. It's just a matter of proportions and in different cell types and what sort of stress or load we're putting the body under, right? But for example, your eyes, the retina in your eye, different neuronal cells and things like that, exclusively red blood cells, they need glucose for fuel. And other, you know, if our muscles, if we're on a long, steady state walk, you know, we're burning mostly fat for fuel and so forth. But if we start sprinting, then we start pivoting over to burn more, as you mentioned, Danny, you know, utilizing more glucose. So it's that ability to kind of pivot back and forth. And so, you know, based upon some of the research that I've read, and there's a lot of things coming out about this, kind of the key metabolic differentiator there is insulin. In the presence of insulin, the body tends to preferentially, and this is more so in the liver and also in the skeletal muscle where we care, you know, when I say we care, because, you know, we do talk about the brain, how the brain loves fat, the brain thrives on fat. And while that may be true, no one ever lost appreciable amounts of body fat, you know, reading or learning a foreign language or, you know, stuff like that, right? You burn fat by using your muscle tissue. And so that's, as you guys know, you know, the key, if you want to quantify a resting metabolic rate, it has to do with how much lean muscle mass people have. You know, obviously hormones come into play, but lean muscle mass and metabolically healthy muscle can help you oxidize a lot of fat. And this is why we see bodybuilders go down to 4% body fat. You know, and some of them don't even do cardio, like Flex Wheeler. You know, when he was training for the
more. I remember you had
more.
Yeah, who'd you have on the show? Dan. It was Stan Efferding, Rhino, talking about that.
Wow.
Yeah, just train their muscle through bodybuilding workouts, right? And that really caused, you know, some of that calorie in conjunction with a mild calorie deficit and, you know, structured eating windows and things like that. That really helps the body to oxidize belly fat and so and other forms of body fat. So that's kind of the key thing. So the way to become metabolically inflexible, number one, is to be sedentary. You know, certain studies have shown that when they bed rest individuals, they start to become insulin resistant after just 72 hours. So just think about like traveling internationally, right? If you were to go to Australia, it's like a 21 hour, maybe 17 hour, depending upon where you live in the US, but you're basically sedentary for an entire day. You're tired, you're sleep deprived, you go to bed, you know, you can start to develop insulin resistance. And, you know, anyone that knows a type 1 diabetic, and you can just pick their brain and say, hey, when you're sick or you have an injury or something and you're bedridden, they'll tell you, yeah, after like day two, I need more insulin just to maintain my glucose.
Because their postprandial numbers don't come down over time, right? They just continue to drift up. There's nothing to counterbalance it beyond the insulin, right?
Exactly, right? So they need, because, you know, the muscles can act almost like insulin, right? All insulin does is just, it's like a key that opens up the door. And you can open up the door to let glucose in by just moving your muscles. And I think you guys have worn the continuous glucose monitor. Have you tried that yet?
Oh, dude, I love it. Yeah, it's crazy. What I learned from that is not to get off subject, but like I was more affected by stress than I was by food. Mm-hmm. So I would have you know, the boys would be like fighting and I would be like trying to, you know, referee and like my blood sugar would like skyrocket. And then I'd do some breathing and then it'd come back down.
I'm like, welcome to my life.
Yeah, that's not right.
That is so fun. Well, we got to finish up talking about that because you mentioned something in our interview about your childhood and I have a similar experience to that. And I want to get into that, but just to kind of finish up, like just by going for a walk after anyone has a meal that even has carbohydrates. And I actually went to a popular vegan restaurant in Seattle because again, there's so many vegan people that are dogmatic and they're like, oh, you know, the keto is bad and so forth. So I'm like, all right, well, I've been mostly keto. If vegan's so healthy, then we'll see what it does to my blood sugar level. And so I had my continuous glucose monitor on, and it skyrocketed. It took a while to get going, but it was the highest my glucose has ever been.
Was it because you had some fat? Did it had a good amount of fat in it? And then so it just kind of took some time for the glucose to go up?
I think so. I couldn't figure it out. It was what I think, and is that there's different phases of insulin release. I mean, I know that there's research out there to show that there's kind of this phase one release. And if the phase one doesn't quite do it, then the pancreatic beta cells are like, oh crap, we really got to release a lot of more. And so I think my body was like, whoa, what's going, like it didn't know how to totally react. But yeah, it skyrocketed to 140. And so normally after a meal, you know, if you're keto, it's at most 110, 115 maybe. And I was like, it kept climbing, and it was like 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just going to go to bed. I can't do that. So I went and took a walk and started doing sprints in between. Like I would see a telephone nice. Pole and sprint to the other telephone, you know what I mean? Doing some intervals.
Yeah.
And it dropped back down to 110. But then I woke up and it was like 99, which for me is way high. But anyway, like you were saying, exercise is almost like an insulin mimetic. Like it mimics what insulin does. And so, you know, again, just if people say, I can't afford a gym, I have bad knees, my back hurts, you know, whatever, just start walking. I mean, people can get a lot of benefit from walking. And then once you can progress and do hills and then pick up the intensity here and there and stuff like that. So I think that's the key to induce metabolic flexibility. The way to kind of reverse and become more inflexible is just to eat all the time and snack all the time. Because again, in the presence of insulin, the body will preferentially burn sugar and you will become more inflexible.
That is such a good point, man. Awesome. And I think it's a blind spot in a lot of people. They want to say, well, there is maybe a metabolic advantage to being in ketosis, and so I can eat more calories at rest. And I've seen things that would indicate that. But then at the same time, are you still not going to exercise? Because, you know, you should exercise as well. That's like tying, you know, almost both hands behind your back. You know, you're just
right.
You're holding yourself back.
Yeah, you bring up a great point about that. And it reminded me of something that you were saying about your guys' journey. And it was, you know, learning paleo first. And what I love about the paleo movement is there's this tacitly implied understanding that it's not just food that you need to influence. Like you need to look at food quality, stress levels, like environmental toxins. You know, it's more of a lifestyle shift. And what I see is a lot of people get excited about keto and they don't really make any other lifestyle changes besides changing the food they eat. Now, obviously food plays such a big role in so many different aspects of our body and our life. And so you can make you can improve your health dramatically when you change your diet. But if that's all you change, you can't expect to like really have a transformation. And so I think people will say, well, I tried keto and it didn't work. And it's like, well, if you only did that, like if you only change your macronutrients and you didn't start exercising, you didn't affect your sleep, you know, you didn't affect your stress management, your relationships, like your activity, then you can't really expect just the pivoting around the macros to totally change your body. And so I think, you know, the people that come to keto from a paleo background, they have that foundation of like, all the other elements and cogs in the wheels that ultimately influence our body's ability to burn fat or store it or build muscle or whatever. So I think it's really important, you know, for that next level of evolution for anyone that's changing their diet is they, while that's great, it's a nice step in the right direction, but you need to look beyond that because there's so many other things in your environment, in your, you know, stress management, like we talked about, that you can manipulate that can further enhance the benefits of going keto.
100%, man. That's kind of how we view it. It's like, I think that if you're feeling better and you're not inflamed anymore, I mean, at least for me, it was natural to just let me park further away from the store when I go here. I just need to walk. You know, I feel like I need to walk. And so don't suppress that urge to move more. You take advantage of it, enjoy it. And it's all this other stuff because it's true what you say. Like, you know, you can be moving more, but because of how much better you feel, but then you still choose to be connected to your screen and sitting down and, you know, are, you know, you're not getting the benefits of the other stuff. And when you asked me about it, I thought you said, you know, how important is it? You know, like, do you think you fix the diet first, or do you think, you know, the other stuff comes first? And for me, I thought, well, I think the diet has to come first for a lot of people because they can't even think straight, you know? And so, yeah. But once they do start to think straight, be open, be aware of what could possibly happen.
Yeah. Great. Well said.
So, okay. Let's say that, you know, I was on a standard American diet, for instance. And so like I switched to keto, like, let's say it's a year ago, and keeping in mind, let's assume my gut health is fair, my sleep and my stress levels are in check, and I'm regularly exercising. You know, a lot of people, they see some fat loss, and then after several months, they don't feel that same feeling of vitality. They may still have some fat left to burn. They're stalling. Like, what are some things, some other avenues that you think people may be missing to get back on track?
Yeah, this is a great question. I think it's a little bit different for everyone, but what, you know, some simple things that every single person can do is just prioritize their sleep. And, you know, because in the biohacking world, there's been this mantra that, like, you can get away. Yeah, the body doesn't need 8 hours or doesn't need 7 hours. Like, you can hustle off 4 or 5 hours if you do these hacks beforehand. And I think for a lot of people, that's not so much the case. And so, like you said, you know, one thing that, you know, wearing the Oura Ring, I think it's been 3 years since I've had that. I found consistently, repeatedly, if I'm on my computer at all, which is hard to do if you have a podcast and a YouTube and all these things,
yeah.
You know, 2 hours before bed, it's done. It's like, it's not worth it. I, you know, just turned 36 in August, and I was looking in the mirror and I'm like, man, I feel like I look older than 36. And it's because, you know, I've been pushing the needle and staying up late. I used to edit videos till 2 a.m. and like do all this stuff. And I'm like, I can't compromise my health for anything, you know, outside of like my family. Right. So anyway, I think a lot of people, and it's not just getting good sleep. It's about how you breathe while you're sleeping. And this is a really kind of controversial thing, this whole mouth taping thing, because I've been taping my daughter's mouth and I have all these, you know, keyboard jockeys saying, you're a horrible parent. How dare you do this and everything like that. But they don't understand that, you know, that if your child is actually breathing through their mouth while they're sleeping, number one, they're getting terrible sleep because their neurology of sleep is such that pretty much all your major muscles relax and become temporarily paralyzed. And the neurologists talk about how this is needed to repair, and part of the repair process, kind of like, if your garbage disposal, you know, in your sink was clogged up, you don't stick your hand in there when it's going full speed. You turn it off, you get out the knife or the spoon or the whatever's in there, then you unplug it, right? So the same thing happens with your muscles, right? If your tongue muscle, for example, you know, when you're breathing through your mouth and it becomes temporarily paralyzed, a natural phenomenon that happens during REM sleep, it will collapse on your breathing airway. And so you'll have these mild hypoxic events. And I noticed, you know, I've been a mouth breather my whole life. I started mouth taping, learned it from a Dr. Mark Brehenna. He's got a great book out called The 8-Hour Sleep Paradox. And it speaks to everything I'm talking about now, that, you know, some people say, oh, well, I get 8 hours of sleep, but I'm still tired. And it could be because they have sleep disordered breathing, which is, I found consistently a lot of people, especially if they got into keto to lose body fat. Anyone that was formerly overweight, not everyone, but a lot of people that were overweight tend to have sleep disordered breathing. And it's on the same trajectory or spectrum as sleep apnea. And we hear about pre-diabetes. You're not quite diabetic. You're insulin resistant, trending towards diabetes. Well, sleep apnea is like the equivalent of diabetes. Sleep disordered breathing is like pre-diabetes. So a lot of people have pre-sleep apnea, also known as sleep disordered breathing. So I would look into that for people that feel tired. If they're keto, but their blood sugars are still high and they're wondering what's going on, if they have the food cravings. And Danny, as you mentioned, if the body weight's not coming off, well, that a lot, you know, studies have shown that when your sleep is fragmented and everything like that, it screws up your leptin, screws up cortisol. And so it can make fat loss more difficult. So learning how to mouth tape, incorporating that can be something that every single person can do. And then, you know, first thing in the morning, I like to get people just to get outside and go walk. So a lot of different applications. We talked about muscle, how it's like an insulin and glucose sponge, which is great. It's where we burn fat. But most importantly, getting that sunlight first thing in the morning entrains all your body's circadian rhythms. And so it can really help with everything you're trying to do. from a productivity standpoint, prevent age-related diseases, dementia, Alzheimer's, cancer, you name it. But most importantly, you know, just like the seasons, our bodies oscillate on the circadian rhythm. And that's why men tend to wake up with an erection, or they should. That's why women, you know, they ovulate, you know, a certain time during the month, right? Consistently. And so when that rhythm gets screwed up, that's when it makes all these metabolic goals that we have, you know, to balance our blood sugar, to burn fat more, less achievable, because our rhythm is off. And so I think for a lot of people, it's off partly due to their bad sleep from sleep disordered breathing, screens at night, but lack of sunlight exposure first thing in the morning.
That's so interesting that you say that. I got to definitely look into the mouth taping thing, because I never thought of that. And there's no way that my oldest is not a mouth breather. Yeah. Because he has a lot of allergies, and I see him. I can tell just picturing him sleep right now. I'm like, there's no way he doesn't breathe, like not breathe through his mouth. So that's it's funny that you get slack from that, because we were actually considering. I asked Danny this morning, and I was like Googling, because my oldest is like kind of coming down with something. I see him sneezing.
He ate poorly the other day.
He did eat poorly the other day, and that always is automatic inflammation. Yeah. And I was like thinking about like sauna usage for children, and apparently the people in Finland, they do it, and they take their babies. I mean, not for as long. It's a few minutes. They start getting them used to it just for a few minutes. And they, you know, they don't suggest as long as for adults, but that it also has benefits, and that it has been studied to detox and do all the same things that it does for us. So it's just
amazing. Yeah. We are at the front of the movement that says that kids are just younger humans. They'd have the same physiology.
Guys, they're humans.
You know, there's a lot of differences there, but the basic physiology is very similar.
Yeah.
And
things that are beneficial to us have to be beneficial to them.
And
it's
just on a different scale. Like, you know, you want to make your child resilient. You want them. The other day, man, we were at Costco, and every single time we get to the register, I have the boys do sprints with me while Mauda's paying. Like, it just, you know, they do sprints like right there. And like, we had both of them doing wheelbarrow walks, you know, like, you ever remember that? Like,
love
you
it.
Grab their
and so
legs
like
and
this, this little
hands.
Kid, you know, my little 4-year-old is walking on his hands with me holding his legs up. And some lady comes up to him and she's like, don't put their hands on the ground. They're going to get dirty. And I'm like, I'm so happy about that. Yes, they're going to get dirty. That's
perfect.
Good. I'm like, it's literally dust, you know,
and
how
this is why kids are sick all the time.
They're not
we like
resilient.
Sterilize them. Yeah. Like, I literally tell my kids, like, when they go reach for the Purell, I'm like, no Purell. I'm like, just
oh
go
yeah,
because
that's like
hands.
If it's at a building that they're at, it's like a cool thing to do, like squeeze.
Yeah, because they have them on everywhere now, so it's like they just want to squeeze. I'm like, no, stop doing that. I'm like, that's not just if you need to wash your hands, you wash your hands, but we don't need to be putting Purell all over ourselves all day.
Yeah, that's what
like,
we do.
We need that. It's beneficial to be exposed to dirt and to get dirty, and it's funny.
So yeah, I don't think people should give you crack. Yeah.
Yeah, I love what you guys are doing. I mean, just small stuff like that, like you're saying, doing the wheelbarrow walks and, you know, getting kids active and showing them that it's cool to do these things. And it's also good for them. And they'll understand, you know, as they get older and older, you know, and appreciate how much different they feel. But apply that same strategy to the mouth taping. Anyone listening, if they're concerned, like, I don't know is my kid going to die? Are they going to suffocate? You know, first of all, the will to breathe and live is way stronger than the adhesive of the tape. Let me tell you, I mean, no one wants to suffocate to death. And I mean, it's just a natural visceral reaction. Yeah. Like the body or an animal will freak out to try to breathe, right? So if you're doubting, if your kid doesn't have that willpower motivation, then you should be doing deeper work and try to figure out what's going on there. So that's my common reply to people. But you know, the thing is with children, it's much more important. Obviously we care about adults and everything like that, but with children, their face is still developing. And if they don't get their, you know, nose breathing down and everything like that, first of all, they're going to have less energy in school and ability to focus and learn new things and language. Brain development could be off if they're mouth breathing. And then most importantly too, is their facial structure. So when you're constantly breathing through your mouth, especially while you're sleeping, it can actually change the mouth development and facial structure. So again, any parents listening right now, my daughter was a mouth breather. She still would be if I didn't tape her. But this can be so important for kids. And so it's not one of these things where you're like, I'm going to wait till they're 18 to put them in the sauna, or I'm going to wait till they're 18 to mouth tape. It's like, you might've missed a key opportunity that could really have impacted the trajectory of their life. And so that's why I encourage people to be open-minded, like you guys are about this. And just a small side note, I know you have questions, the sauna. So we have an infrared sauna here at our house. And when my daughter was sick, I dragged her in with me, and, normally she can only stand like 5 minutes, and she's like, I have to get out, I'm so hot. I'm like, no. Anyway, so she was like really sick. Like, she's like, I want to go to the doctor, I just don't feel right. And so I go, okay, let's just do 20 minutes in here, Nez. And I had to like really convince her, like, she wanted to get out at 5 minutes. I said, no, just wait. And then she was like dripping in sweat. And then we went and put her in like a cold shower afterwards and everything like that. The cold was completely gone. Like, I literally thought she wasn't going to be able to go to school the next day. I didn't know what she was coming down with, because it was the sickest I've ever seen her, and my wife as well. And she was totally fine. Now, could that have been an end of one? Maybe the sauna had nothing to do with it. But I really think, like you said, the Finnish folks, there's a ton of research out there. And if we think about the different proteins and things like that in our body that increase and raise our temperature, they're doing so to kill off microbes. And so sauna is another thing. If families, you know, mentioned Danny. Oh yeah, it's key.
I swear by it. Yeah.
Yeah. There was last year, cause we've been doing sauna since like consistently since 2017.
And I do dry heat though. I don't know. I'm sure infrared. Oh,
it's just the benefits of the dry heat plus infrared.
The infrared.
Yeah.
Right. Cause so you're like, getting the temperature too.
Yeah. But amazing. Like, you know, there have been periods, and I'm actually in a period like that right now, which I'm not happy to say. It's just because we only have one car right now, but, where I have been less diligent about my sauna. And like last year, was it 2018? Yeah.
Yeah. It was last year around the time where people are getting sick.
Yeah. Yeah. We all came down with something. Now, mind you, we're all pretty healthy. So
But Maura
didn't even have that because she was, diligent with her sauna.
It's like, I'm not getting sick. I'm going in the sauna.
and going back to what you talk about like, you know, they say that kids, you know, wait until you're 18. I remember you've spoke about like on your bio, like on your page, like back then I thought I had to wait until a certain age to lift weights. And I remember when I was like, you know, getting my CSCS, and it was like, you know, the National Strength and Conditioning Association has these age time frames, and I guess you got to standardize stuff. But the way I see it is, if your child can, you know, has the body control to do, you know, perfect pushups, perfect pull-ups, perfect squats, you know, at 8 or 9 or 10, and they want to continue increasing that load, then let's go. Let's increase that load slowly, but, you know, under supervision. But we're just a little bit too, and this is, it's making us less resilient. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Well, you guys talk about this and the unschooling. And I think part of it comes from in our culture is you listen to your teacher, you listen to your professor, do as the government tells you. And then so people can't laterally think. They're like, oh, my kid can work out. Well, I thought you shouldn't work. Yeah, they like can't think because they think that they need to listen to what everyone else tells them to do. So I love how you parent, because, you know, then it just, and that's what I encourage. And you know, again, the flack that I got on the carnivorous diet is I was like, guys, you just got to think this through. I'm not saying it's good or bad for everyone, but just know what your goals are and know your kid. Like you said, Danny, you know, if someone's kid cannot do a proper pull up or push up, they shouldn't be lifting weights. Like, they got to master the body weight stuff first. So just think it through.
Awesome. Well, to keep on this topic of family.
So we're so happy you brought up kids. Let's talk about kids.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it's important to pursue health, fitness, meaningful connection with our families. And we would love to hear like your thought process and your approach on how you do it with your family, like with nutrition and, you know, just the overall.
All of it.
Yeah, that's such a, and by all means, I don't consider myself to be a perfect parent at all. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. But, you know, what we have realized is, like, growing up, I'll just say, to compare and contrast, like, you know, my dad wasn't around a lot. He was building this business, you know, very successful and things like that. And so I, you know, we would go on vacation here and there, but I didn't get to like see what he did all the time and so forth. Again, you know, he taught me a lot of great things and everything like that. But for me, I want to be as hands-on as possible. So anything that I'm doing in the backyard, fixing the chicken coop, even editing a video, I'm like, Nez, here's what I just try to get her involved. When we're cooking, I try and get her involved so she understands how to cook. I mean, it's crazy, but we spend 18 years in school. We never learned how to cook. We learned about math and all this stuff. It's like we eat three times a day. We barely do math anymore, right? So the point that I'm trying to drive home is the more that we can get our kids involved, the better. And that comes through everything, like even paying bills, that, you know, just showing them and making them realize that one day they might be doing this too. And so going to the grocery store, anything in the garden. And that's why I love growing vegetables and having the backyard chickens, because it's something that Nez and I can do. I mean, she's only 6 years old. It's not like we can go do powerlifting, right? So it's like, what can we do with her? You know, and so that's the thing. It's like we can go and she loves seeing the bugs and the compost. She loves seeing like these little seeds turn into raspberries or a vegetable, you know, seeing the baby chickens grow up into big chickens. The whole process, like for her, it's super exciting. And same with cooking. And so now it's like, okay, Nez, you can crack the egg. We're going to make eggs. Here's what you do. And so again, just getting her involved and becoming part of the process. Yeah. And so then she understands the difference between healthy food and then kind of like junk food. And so we kind of make, we see Nez, you know, when you cook your food from scratch, get it from the backyard, it's better for you than just like, you know, the kids that have these Lunchables, you know, at her school and so forth. Oh, and she's like starting to put two and two together. So again, I don't know if that's the right thing to do. That's just what we do. And again, with like the mouth taping thing or the sauna, she sees us doing it. So then she wants to do it, you know, so she wanted to mouth tape. It wasn't like, some lady said, it's despicable that you tape your child's mouth shut. So I was like really sarcastic.
I didn't even think of that.
I do it. Yeah. And I go, yeah. And when she misbehaves, we tape her eyes shut too. You know, I was totally joking. I'm like, come on, lady. This is the most important person in my life. You think that I'm really just going to like be a jerk about it? Like,
yeah, come on.
You have no idea how much I care about my kid. Like, don't even like try to like tell me how to parent. Anyway.
It's so ironic because like these people are like so controlling most of the time. Like they're like the complete opposite.
And their kids
like
are
their
probably
priorities
eating Cheetos,
are yeah,
let's be honest.
And their priorities are on all the wrong things. Like don't climb up that slide. It's the wrong way. You don't. And then, but then at the same time, oh, but I would never do that. I would never put tape on my child's mouth. I'm like, dude, can you just take that thought process one inch further? Just can you go like 1 centimeter further to think about this? Like you're missing the forest for the trees. Like it's. Oh, it's tough, but you know, that's, you're never going to control that. You're never going to be able to control
people
that. I just laugh at
opinions.
It.
It's you just have to be jokey, but you know, I've learned from you during our podcast. You said something like, I can't remember how you said it, but it was like, you know, when your child was climbing on something high, you said, dude, if that's going to hurt, if you fall, instead of saying, don't do that, tell them about the consequences of doing it. And I, you know, because we always say, as parents, no, don't stop, be quiet.
Right.
You know,
be careful.
I can't remember the statistic, right? Kids hear no like 15,000 times before they're 18 or something crazy like that. So anyway, I want to just say thank you because I've been doing that more like with Inez. Like she's one time the other day, she was like standing on the counter and like trying to like hide from the dog. And I said, you know, it's really going to hurt. It would hurt if you fell and we might have to take you to the doctor. And she's like, oh yeah, I am kind of hot, you know? And so she's like, so okay, maybe. You know, maybe I can just like hide from the dog some other way without like precariously standing on the countertop. Right. So anyway, thanks for sharing that.
Oh man.
Yeah. Or just like pointing out things, like if they're like climbing something and it might be slippery, just like notice how slippery that is.
It. Yeah.
And like, just make them aware so that they can, cause they're, like you said, like they have a will to live. It's not like my kid's going to jump in front of like traffic or he's going to like throw himself off the top of the slide. Like, you know, they have a will to not get hurt. And when you do say no so many times, it does lose its power. So we really try to minimize it instead of saying like, no, like, or even if it's like, oh, can we get this or go somewhere? Sure. Let's check the schedule, you know, instead of just like, no, you know, cause it loses its power. So when you do say no, you want it to matter, you know, it's for an emergency. So when you say no, like they know there must be something terribly wrong here because they never say no.
Yeah. And I, you know, there's lots of ways of, you know, it's semantics, but sometimes, you know, the words matter, you know, like one that I fall into a lot is, you know, do you need help? And I've been really trying to say, you know, hey, I'm here if you need help.
Right.
Because, you know, let them, they want to do it. They want to figure it out, you know.
And they need to struggle.
Yeah, they got to struggle too.
It's good for them too, yeah. You know.
Totally. Yeah.
All right. So obviously, you know, we talk about this whole holistic thing. We like to highlight tools that people can use to improve their health. And, you know, just one example, the mouth breathing, like that's quantifiable. Like I have friends who have done it and they're like, my HRV went through the roof. My deep sleep has gone up. So, you know, we just had our friend on, Jim Morgenstern, to talk about chiropractic. And obviously we'd love to talk to your wife as well about that because we know she's a chiropractor. But when it comes to health, you know, you mentioned this, we're focused on how we eat and then, you know, then also how we train. So beyond sleep, what are some areas that you've looked at that have led to some, you know, major positive impacts in your health? And what do you think that some people may be missing?
Such a great point. Well, I think, you know, just simple things like stimulus to the muscle is key. And I can just kind of expand on some of these, but I'll just give them to you right now. Any sort of cold stress, or heat stress in general, or temperature manipulation. So we talked about the benefits of the sauna, but I think a lot of people benefit from cold immersions, and yes. It can start out with just a cold shower, you know. But if you look at different parts of the world, there's people, and I was in Dublin, Ireland, you know, doing some podcast filming and everything like that about a year ago, and there's this, I think it's called the Sea of Man or the Strait of Man. I'm getting the geography wrong. But anyway, every Sunday, all these centurions and these people in their 90s go down and jump.
The Isle of Man? I mean, is it the Isle of Man?
The Isle of Man, I believe it's that part of water. I think it's in the body of water in between England and Ireland. And this little place where all these people go. So it's a hangout spot, but they're jumping in the ocean and it's freezing cold. I mean, if you look on a map, how far north Ireland is. And so it's just interesting. Like most people are like, oh, I could never do that. And they're like 35. It's like, well, you can jump in cold water, but there's some, you know, lady that's 99 that's doing it. Like, why can't you? Right. And so it speaks to what you said, Danny, is we want to raise resilient kids. And a lot of us lack resilience because of too much comfort. We've never had, you know, to be outside of 70 degree temperature, right? We go from a house to our car to the office, and it's all temperature controlled, right? And so part of that is, you know, heat stress and then also cold stress. So for $110, people can go to a Tractor Supply store, get a trough, you know, and even if they live in an apartment, you know, just fill it up with water. It'll get cold, especially this time of year, and just start your day with that. So that's one of the things that we like to do, contrast. We have the infrared sauna, and then just, again, it's only $100 to buy this trough thing, fill it with water. The water lasts about 3 weeks, depending upon, you know, how dirty or how much you use it and all that. But that's just another great way to just kind of kickstart your whole, you know, your body's autonomic nervous system and parasympathetic tone, heart rate variability. So I'm a big fan of that. And a simple thing is just like, hey, tell your spouse, you know what, honey, we're going to turn the heat off tonight. Literally they're studying.
I'm all for that.
And
one.
Actually, it's hard. As women, you know, the temperature fluctuations can be a little bit tougher. Totally get it. Because my wife and I battle with this all the time. And
so do we.
I get so angry sometimes. Right? I'm like, I'm freezing.
I'm like, I can't take off a layer of skin. You can add more layers of clothing.
I know, but I can't eat with like a throw and a sweater.
Not funny. Well, here's some motivation for you. We hear about all the benefits of calorie restriction and longevity. Decreased body temperature is one of these things that's correlated with longevity and improved health outcomes. And in fact, I remember reading research in the Journal of Obesity, a paper that correlated high house temperature with obesity.
Wow.
So again, you know, it's these things that we look at as like a mild inconvenience, like, oh, I have to be a little cold. But it's actually sending different messages to your body. And
you sleep better as well, right? For optimal sleep,
I sleep. Well, that's something that I've actually noticed because I'm freezing at night. But you know what? When it comes to sleeping, there's been times where you've left out of town and I like forget to put it extra low at night and I have to get up because I'm hot. I'm not sleeping as well. It has to be cold.
Yeah. You sleep so much better.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would do that. Again, stimulus to the muscle, you know, as a tactic, you know, everyone can do this. This can be walking. This can be air squats. Of course, as you get more progressed, you can get into resistance training, powerlifting, bodybuilding, stuff like that. But I think we need some stimulus all the time. And I you know, start my day off with like banded glute bridges, things like that, just to fire up the glutes, fire up the core. I think a lot of people, you know, we're just sitting on our butts. We're driving, we're on the train, we're behind a computer. Yeah. And we wonder why we have bellies and cellulite on our backside. It's because we're not stimulating the muscle. So I think that's key. You know, getting out in nature, there's a ton of research I'm sure you all have seen, and Shenron Roku, forest bathing, just being in nature.
Oh, I love that idea, man. I love that. Just sitting down and just paying attention to the sounds, the noises, the smells, like that is to me a beautiful thing.
It's key. And there's research to back it up, which is so cool. Like it can raise your natural killer cell count, which can affect cancer onset, which can affect autoimmunity, which can affect, you know, seasonal colds and flus, right? So yeah, I think those are kind of the big things. And again, I mean, you can get into all these stem cells and all this crazy stuff, but it's like the things that we've been talking about today, anyone of virtually any income, you know, with some budgeting can allocate some resources to do this stuff. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to be, you know, drop $30,000 on a stem cell procedure or anything crazy. You can do these things, get cold, get hot, stimulate your muscle, you know, get out in nature. I mean, these things are affordable for all.
Yeah, man. And like, so, you know, one of the things that you just made me think about is most people live close to the gym, relatively close. I mean, I would assume if you live in a big city, you might be as little as 3 miles or less from your gym. Why not take a day or two to walk to the gym? You know, do one of those, you know, take a day where maybe you spend a little bit less time lifting weights in the gym, but you actually walk to and from the gym. I have been doing that. Like I'll have 1 or 2 days a week where I'll have Maura drop me off and then I walk home. And then I'll have 1 day a week where I'll just walk to the gym and walk back. And it's like, it's so good. Obviously it's a time suck, but if you're already planning on spending the time, you just change your workout around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or listen to a podcast or audiobook or.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I'll just walk and listen to an audiobook. Sometimes I'll call my parents, you know, connect with my parents. Sometimes I'll do a live. I've been getting away from that lately because you know how iPhone, it's already to the point where, you know, I can leave the house at 89%.
And then you're just like at 30% when you get to the
just,
gym.
Just from blinking. So I can't do a live, but, this is great, man.
I know. I love all that. It's funny how you mentioned I saw a video one time about like the Icelandic kids and they go and they roll in the snow
and they're excited about it.
And they love it after being in like a heated thing.
The sauna, yeah.
And there's a woman at my gym that she is from Switzerland and she says that the spas there are ridiculous, that it's all about that change in temperature. Like they lay on these hot rocks. And then they jump in these cold pools and then they do it again. And that's like how, that's just normal. And that's just, and, you know, having our kids do this, if anything, it's better because this is going to stick with them and they're going to remember all these things like, oh, I'm getting sick. Maybe I should try the sauna, you know, or I have my kids go outside every day at least and I'm like, go get sun. I'm like, just go stand there. No sunblock, go get sun for at least 20 minutes.
Yep.
You know?
Nice.
And just these, we got to start implementing like the going outside upon awakening. Well, I wake up before the sun, so it's probably I should go out when the sun is coming out, obviously.
Maybe, you know, you'll have the boys like
and go for a walk, maybe like around the block.
Yeah, or do that. Just do that. I mean, I think another thing with the kids is, you know, like you talk about resilience. And I think I might have mentioned them, Mike, when I was talking with you on your podcast about the Bucket List family. Did we speak about them or are you familiar with them?
I'm not familiar. Yeah.
Refreshing. Dude, they're so cool, man. They're this family that traveled for like 2 to 3 years straight. And like their main thing is, you know, they have three things. When they get to a country, they immerse themselves in the culture. They focus on a way to serve. So they'll always do at least one activity where they're serving people. And then they always challenge themselves. And these challenges, like an adventure. And like sometimes it's like being in one of these, in a precarious situation, like on a weird bridge or swimming with sharks and like these kids, when you tell them,
their 3-year-old swam with humpback whales in Tonga.
Never forget that, dude. Like, and you know, we talk about this. We use this story a lot. Richard Branson, when he was 4 years old, he lived in the country, and his mom was like, you know, they were like, what, 8 miles away from their house?
Yeah, 8 or 9 miles away
and
from home.
She's like, do you think you can make it home? Do you think you can find your
Dean's
way home?
That's Dean's age, four.
Yeah, that's Dean's age. And and he said, well, I think I could manage. And it took him like 9 hours. But the minute he got home, he was like, there's really nothing in this world that I can get challenged to do that I can't do.
And we all know the rest of the story. I mean, he owns an island.
And like we talk about
very
like
successful
the thing that you, that the reason why we love the bucket list family is because they're obviously their connection. You can see their dynamic is like goals for sure.
Yeah. Family goals. But
but they also like, they're like, no, it's okay. Like
they're challenging.
Like
their
I'm,
kids
first of all I'm
time.
Right there with you. Like I'm doing it with you. And second of all, no, it's okay. It's totally, listen, it's okay. And they have that trust. Like if daddy tells me that I can do this, then I can do this. And like, think about the
and deep, it's like the more you do it, you get, you realize like, oh, the more that you do and you challenge yourself in that way, the more you realize that it's not that big of a deal and you can continue to do it. You know, like he had her jump into, I don't know, I think it was actually Iceland. They were in Iceland and she dove into this like probably freezing pool of water to grab a rock from the bottom. Like that was her challenge. Like you think you could touch the floor, you know, like
I'm still dealing with the effects of what, you know, quitting football in college after, you know, several years did to my psyche, you know, because I quit in college. Like I after a few years, I was disillusioned. And, you know, like imagine doing that over and over throughout life, like what that's doing to you, you know?
Oh my gosh. Such a good point. Yeah. And, Angela Duckworth's book, Grit, she talks about that, you know, with kids to never quit, like as a family. So let's say, I think she has two children. And if one child starts piano, she says, you know what? You have to see it all the way through. If it's a 12-week block that you originally started at week 9, you don't like it, you're going all the way through. So she's exercising that grit muscle because like you said, you know, I quit wrestling in high school and I felt like such a wuss for years. I was like, what? I can't believe I did that. And I would see the coach and I just felt so. And so it's allowing our kids just to quit, or even us, like, oh, I'm going to start this workout program. And then January 3rd, you're like, yeah, I don't want to do it anymore. And then we just quit. Like we feel bad about ourselves. And so
and it makes it easier to
sticking
quit
things
again.
Through. Right. Exactly.
Well, we're running a little bit long, but I wanted to just give one more, because this is something that's important to us. And we wanted to give you an opportunity because we talk about it. Oh, would you like to ask that last question?
Go ahead.
Okay. So we were talking about like environmental toxins. So some of the things we look at is, you know, stress, plastics, you know, but I think there's one that you mentioned that I think a lot of people should be aware of. And we were like, you know, we don't want to limit screen time because it goes against our, you know, the whole philosophy of giving the kids the autonomy that they need
to make their decisions.
But then in some situations, like, you know, you look at all the big tech giants, they don't even let their kids be on computers. And it's telling that, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates,
they must know something.
Yeah. Like they don't let their kids get iPhones. They don't let them get, iPad. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, it's such a great point. I mean, there's a lot of books that have come out, Irresistible, Adam Alter. There's this other book called iGen. You know, screens are very addictive. They're as addictive as, you know, I mean, it's funny. Porn is on the screen, gambling screen, you know, all this sort of stuff. And so I think people need to be aware of the fact that we kind of make an excuse as adults. We're like, well, my kids shouldn't be on it, but I'm doing business when I check my email 1900 times a day, you know, right? Kind of thing. And so I think all of us, you know, look, these cell phone companies, the software, the devices, Instagram, like it's set up to be a continual new, it's novelty, it's dopamine, it's reward seeking. I mean, especially a lot of us love that, right? And so, I mean, if you look at opiates and the mechanism of all these highly addictive drugs, amphetamines, meth, is just constant dopamine stimulation. And so as a parent, you know, I mean, I realized that I was being incongruent telling, oh, Inez, get off the screen, you know, and then I'm sitting here checking my email, I'm on Instagram and all that. So I like to just block it and cluster it. Obviously, we need to be able to do our business, and it's convenient to have a phone that we can check into all our different things. Be mindful of the fact, and this, just be aware of the fact that most people are probably addicted to their devices, and you need to like set boundaries around that. Just like you would set boundaries around drinking alcohol or watching Netflix or whatever. Like this is one of these things that, that we need to set boundaries around. And so, and I realized that as a, and the reason why drugs, you know, illicit drugs are illegal for everyone and kids is because, you know, and alcohol, we don't let kids drink alcohol till they're 21, at least in the US, is because kids don't have that prefrontal cortex development to realize, oh, I think I've been on this device too long. I should stop. They just want to keep consuming because it's stimulating their neurological pathways that are, you know, synergistic with addiction. So for us, I mean, we just cluster it. I mean, I realize that she's going to be on devices where, you know, she needs to learn how to use these things, but in moderation. So yeah, we just limit it on the weekdays, try to keep it under 30 minutes. And sometimes it's none at all. On the weekends, hour tops. And we try to split that up. But you know, the cool thing is that's where going outside in nature, going to the zoo, going in the backyard, you can't be on the devices then, and going hiking. So we do all those different things. And so literally the only time that she's kind of on it is when, if we have to do some work or if we're on it, we're like, okay, you can watch a movie for 20 minutes or you can do this for 20 minutes. And yeah, but it's a tough situation. You know, a lot of parents are not aware that there's this addictive element to that. And so they give their kids an iPad and they think, well, they're learning something. So they justify it and rationalize it. But, you know, I think not only are these things addictive, but as you mentioned, the toxicity, potentially the EMF and different electromagnetic fields that are emitted, not only from the device itself, but the Wi-Fi connected to the device. So if you are on Wi-Fi, your computer or your tablet or your iPad, it's reeling, it's sending and receiving tons of messages from either cell towers, or your Wi-Fi. So I always have the Wi-Fi off when she's holding it. And I use this little thing that I do for like YouTube lives and stuff. I give her a little stick. So it's like away from her body. It's like, kind of like we call it a Gorilla Pod in the biz. Okay. People might know, like a selfie stick. So give your kid something. So it's like you're creating some sort of physical separation between the device and your kid. So there's just a few little hacks there, but people I think are shocked when they realize the addictive element to these devices and the potential health issues with prolonged use.
Yeah. And I love what you said about, well, one, we are totally in agreement. You have to model the behavior for them as well. We can't be telling them one thing and doing the other, but I also kind of don't really make a huge fuss about it. Because we just keep them so busy that it just doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean? So it's like we keep them outside. When their iPads die, I don't tell them to charge
it. Yeah, they don't charge for days and days.
Sometimes
and days.
They don't. And the thing is that they're kids, so they don't want to do things and they're kind of lazy. So like they don't want to charge their iPad. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess it's not charged. Like I just don't make a big deal out of it. If I see that they've been watching, you know, TV for too long, I just suggest another activity. And so, you know, sometimes that may mean I've got to go with them. You know, I'm like, let's just go outside for a little bit. I just want to get sun or something. You want to go for a walk around the block? And they almost never say no. It's no, like they want to go outside. Yeah, they want to go outside. And just like not making a huge fuss, because I think once we start to make like a fuss about it, then it becomes just a kind of a
struggle.
It's just a power struggle. Yeah. And, you know, it's just more of a control thing, even if they don't really necessarily want to be on the device.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good advice. Like just filling their days up with other activities, not really, I don't, when we're going to a restaurant, I don't take the iPad. I don't like take it with me. I don't lean on that as a crutch. Like I'm like, oh, forgot it. We forgot it, I guess, you know, like it's just how it is.
And with that, you know, these kids, like, you know, parents, I totally understand like the initial like fear or apprehension at, you know, trying to limit these things, but you'd be surprised how quickly kids adapt to new environments.
So
like every time we do something new, we're like, hey, we're, you know, this
week, a whole week.
Yeah. We're like this week, we're not having any screen time. We're just going to read. And, you know, we need to go back to that because like we slept better than ever. Like everybody in this house slept better, and I still don't have my Oura Ring. I got to send back the sizing. I'm dying to get my Oura Ring. But but at least I ordered it. I paid for it.
He
but
paid
now
for
I got
it.
Now
He's
I'm in
do
that
the process. Yeah.
But yeah, man, like it's so important, and like, and don't be afraid to. It's the same thing we say with diet. Like people are like, you know, my child's a picky eater. Everybody thinks that their child is different, and we're like, you know, let them experience hunger for the first time in a long time. You know, let them, you know, take the stuff out of the house and see how quickly they adapt. Like they'll adapt. You see that it happened in the Magic Pill with those autistic kids. You know.
Yeah. Incredible.
So Man,
this has been awesome.
Great point.
Yeah,
of course. It's
yeah, guys, this was fun.
Yeah, so awesome to have you, man. I feel like we can talk about so many. We didn't even touch on gut health.
Oh man,
we didn't touch on any of that. So we'd love to have you back, man. It was our pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Just let me know. And feelings mutual. Really, I like learning from you and hearing your perspective. And I think a lot of parents out there are looking for inspiration because, as we've talked, we kind of jokingly texted, you know, that people relegate us as weirdos, you know, because we're trying to like do the healthy thing. We're like the odd duck. It's like, oh, come on, just let your kid have the bubblegum flavored weird cake. Like, what's wrong with you? But I think a lot of people are struggling with that. And I know our mutual friend, John Lemonsky.
Oh, I love him.
And kicking.
What they're like doing right now is freaking amazing. I'm just like,
dude, just like
you guys are the
suitcase.
Best. I'm just like, awesome. I can't believe what you guys are doing. Like, I'm so jealous. I want to do it.
It's so cool. So yeah, appreciate it.
Well, before we go, let us, our followers know where they can find out more about you, like all the things that you've got going on and where they can find all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, if anyone enjoyed this conversation, my website is highintensityhealth.com. And again, Mutzel, if you just type in Mike Mutzel in YouTube or Instagram, it will show up there. And the YouTube channel is High Intensity Health. And so everything's kind of under that umbrella. The only different URL is metabolic_Mike on Instagram, but it's still under Mike Mutzel. So yeah, I would love to connect with you guys. You can send me a DM, say you heard me on the podcast. And I do answer those. I like hearing, you know, what people find interesting and creating more content that will resonate with people and help them make better lifestyle choices.
Perfect.
Thank you so much, man. We are, again, so happy you came on, and I can't wait for people to hear this one. Have an awesome day.
Thanks so much, brother. You guys too.